Hey guys, welcome back to the GOAT Network. It is Friday, March the 40th, and we are ready to have a mock draft. Monica.
The 40th?
It feels like it. I mean, what day would that be? The 15th?
I think so. I think the 15th. Probably.
March 15th, 2027. We're ready. Let's do this. Okay. Monica, I've got some rules for this one.
Okay.
We're not going to give much analysis on the picks we already know.
Okay.
But I also have changed some things up. So, let's get ready to rumble.
All right.
I'm going to go with Caleb Williams at number one. I'm going to go with Drake May at number three, which means Jaden Daniels stays at two. And I'm trying to find him here. He's buried down deep in the depth chart there. Jaden Daniels at two. Drake May goes at three. I'm sticking with Malik Nabers at four. I still believe Marvin Harrison could see a slight dip. And there's some things I was listening to today when it comes to Marvin Harrison. He's not very good in front of people. He's not necessarily a media guy. He's not necessarily that type of thing. And I think that could end up hurting him. That's why I'm going to drop him just a little bit. Pick number five, Brock Bowers. Stays the same. Monica, at this point, Mach 3.0, do you still have any issues at all with my first five picks?
I am uncertain about Brock Bowers after the Will Dissly signing today.
I've wondered about that, but here's the crazy thing. Dissly's not going to do what Bowers does. But Dissly is a pretty good blocking tight end, too. And Bowers isn't really supposed to be a blocker. So I'll be curious, but I'm going to stick with it for now because I haven't seen anything just yet that would make me think otherwise. Pick number six, Joe Alt. Pick number seven, Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Titans. Joe Alt to the Giants, by the way, excuse me. Pick number eight, Rome Odunze to the Atlanta Falcons. I guess I should share my screen with you, shouldn't I? I'm so sorry, Monica.
That would be helpful.
Yeah, you're trying to keep up and you have no idea what's going on. sorry about that.
All good.
Let me pull this over here to where it's a little bit easier to zoom in. Ah. There we go. You can see that, right?
Yeah, I can see that. Rome Odunze to the Falcons. Especially with a Kirk Cousins signing, I just feel like that's really, really, that's a very, very dangerous team.
Yeah, it feels, no pun intended, it feels kismet, you know. Fields, get it? Because he's not going there now. So, Rome Odunze at number eight. I'm sticking with Cooper DeJean at number nine. No, I'm not, because they signed Jalen Johnson. That's right. I've got to change this pick. Let me do this. I think it's kind of interesting. You're gonna see a guy probably go higher than he should. You're going to see a couple of guys that are going to be a little bit more intriguing to those. If you have a brand new quarterback and you want to protect him, you can do it one of two ways. You can go the Bengals route. And you can essentially say, we're going to get the best playmaking wide receiver that we can get, and we're going to try to help you as much as we can in that department. You could also get the best offensive lineman that you could get. And that's the way that I'm going to go. I'm going to take Olufoshanu here. I still think he's the second best offensive lineman. His fall right now is kind of crazy how it's going that way.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
And I'm going to stick with Taliese Fuaga. But now things get spicy. The Vikings have no quarterback, and they have no choice. They've got to take a quarterback. And this is where things get a little bit more interesting because you have conventional wisdom and you have the wisdom of NFL teams. Conventional wisdom says take the guy that you think has the best chance to be a mistake-free quarterback in the sense of he can play well with Justin Jefferson, he's good to go. Organization wisdom says take the guy that is flashy and exciting and interesting. And so I'm going to take Michael Penix Jr. here.
That is not where I thought you were going.
Thought I was going to take Bo Nix, didn't you?
Actually, I didn't. I thought you were going to go J.J. McCarthy.
I thought about it. But I can't, you know, leave you in such a lurch without a franchise quarterback, Monica.
Oh, brother.
So I'm going to give you Bo Nix. And though I think that that won't actually be what ends up happening, I think right now on the board he's the best quarterback available, and I think everybody would be excited to have him. Because you have nothing as of right now, unless you do something different. So the Raiders have no quarterback right now to really speak of. Yeah, they signed Gardner Minshew, and it kind of sounds like that's what they're prepared to do with Aiden O'Connell and all that kind of stuff. 2 years, $25 million for Gardner Minshew. That's not really starter money. It's also not necessarily backup money.
Yeah, it's that weird in-between thing.
It's the closest thing we've seen to Mitch Trubisky's contract from 2 years ago, where he signed 2 years, $27 million. It was almost identical to that. So I think the Raiders are in the market for a quarterback. And what hilarity would it be? And I'm doing this on this one because I just feel like it's a possibility for things like this to kind of shake things up. If you had Wish Patrick Mahomes playing against actual Patrick Mahomes twice a year, I'm going to give Spencer.
That is Spencer that. Oh, wow.
And that's where we're at right now. You come back now to Earth and to reality, and the Saints are here. And I think the reports of them potentially moving off of Marshawn Lattimore are possible, but they also lost some pretty key players on the defensive line too, and Cam Jordan's not getting any younger. You got Byron Murphy sitting here, Jerzon Newton sitting here, but Cooper DeJean is really tempting, but I'm going to go ahead and let him fall yet again, and I'm going to give Byron Murphy to the New Orleans Saints. It pains me, but I'm doing
it. Yeah, that's tough. That's really tough.
At number 15, I'm going to give Cooper DeJean to the Indianapolis Colts. He's in such a weird flux, but if he can play safety and corner and come up in the box like Ed Reed might have done in the past and Polamalu did, you take that and you figure it out later.
And what I've been reading about DeJean is he can play supposedly any position in the secondary.
Exactly. So at pick number 16, I'm sticking with Jared Verse to the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me to 17, and the Jacksonville Jaguars have made a statement that they're going offense in free agency, which usually means you're trying to shore up positions that you have no real belief are going to be there in the draft. So Dallas Turner's sitting here, and I can't pass him up. I'm taking Dallas Turner at number 17.
I was really, really surprised you didn't go Nate Wiggins there.
I thought about it, but I have a plan for Wiggins, and it's in a couple of picks. Number 18, Cincinnati Bengals. You've got all of these different problems on the offensive line. You've got all of these different problems with your salary cap coming down the pipe. And I still think the Alabama hold will be here in full force in this draft. This is the last batch of players that have had Saban their entire career that they were there, if they were there from start to finish. And it's really the last batch of players that we know were given a good trained year with Nick Saban under their belt. Nobody knows what this Alabama team next season is going to look like. Nobody knows what they're going to be able to accomplish on the field. And that first three and out, that first, you know, surrendered touchdown on a weird thing because the tendencies of Saban are just not quite there, that's going to be felt. And next year, I think we'll see a potential shift in Alabama players falling a little bit more in the draft. We're already kind of seeing that with the cornerbacks, with Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terry and Arnold being in such weird opposite ends of the spectrum. But who do we talk about on Wednesday rising up the boards, Monica?
J.C. Latham.
And that's who I'm giving to the Cincinnati Bengals. here we are, the LA Rams, they're on the clock at 19. And I just can't talk myself out of the quarterback with them. They're fixing the offensive line. They're doing everything that they can. And J.J. McCarthy is there. And I'm going to go ahead and give him again to the LA Rams. I just think it makes sense. I feel confident in that. But we're not going to do what everybody thinks we're going to do with the Steelers. I've given a center the last 75 mock drafts that I've done for the Steelers.
Yeah.
But there is a position of need that I feel the Steelers have to get right. And I don't know that he'll be there in the second round, and I can't take that chance that he won't be. And that's Quinyon Mitchell. I know that that type of player is not going to be there when we pick again. And I also know that you can't have a shutdown secondary with only one side of the field locked up. The problem the Steelers have had the last several years is they've had Minkah Fitzpatrick in the backfield and no real shutdown corner. We haven't had a shutdown corner since Ike Taylor. Now, Joey Porter Jr. seems like he fits the bill, and I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But you put Quinyon Mitchell on the other side, and maybe, just maybe, with the free agent money the Steelers have, they could also go out and get a Justin Simmons or another safety of some sort that's out there. Think of that backfield. And think of how much time that will give T.J. Watt to get to the quarterback. Because when you can't just pull up and shoot over the left or right side of the field wherever Minkah and Joey Porter aren't, then you don't have an easy time to just do the dink and dunk that Brady used to do that would always frustrate us to our core. So, Monica.
And also, T.J. Watt, you know how people, you know, on the TV will talk about coverage sacks?
Yep.
T.J. Watt is getting, what was it, 19 sacks without really having the advantage of coverage sacks.
Yeah.
That number is going to skyrocket.
I think so, too. And this is where it just pains me to do this, but I'm going to. Because the Pittsburgh Steelers are not in cap purgatory. And the Miami Dolphins currently are, and they just signed a guy to $30 million when they were negative under the cap. And so this is my scenario. Why can't I do what Daniel Jeremiah did last year? Why can't I say that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to trade back up into the round one pick after they made their player selection and make their team better? Why can't I do that? You know why? Because I can do that. And so I'm going to give my second round pick next year and my third round pick next year and 194 overall, okay? And I'm going to make this trade to get back into 21, and I'm going to draft Jackson Powers Johnson. I don't care. I don't have any doubts in my mind that if the Steelers were to do a move like this, that number one, I would have no issue with it, because we need a center and we need a corner. Number two, you still have an opportunity to keep your second round pick this year in a draft that we know. You still have your first round pick next year. We're losing a ton of players potentially where we might have an opportunity to actually bring in the compensatory selections a little higher next year. We usually do a pretty good job of everything that we do when it comes to that. And I think it's going to be interesting. By the way, Tommy Townsend signs with the Texans, a 2-year deal, $6 million. So Matt Areza is going to be the Chiefs punter unless something changes between now and the NFL regular season. But Monica, what are your thoughts about Miami trading down with the Steelers and adding picks for the next year's draft? What do you think about all that? I mean, how likely of a scenario is it, and what do you think about those two moves?
Okay, so where are the Steelers picking in round two?
52 overall.
Because my thought was this. Why would they do that when there's corners that are slipping? the Nate Wiggins, Terrion Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry, all of these are slipping. So why do they not take Jackson Power Johnson at 20, get one of those guys at their second round pick, and keep those other picks?
Because by the end of this mock draft, all of those corners you just mentioned are going to be gone. And right now, there's a little bit of a run on corner happening. Cooper DeJean was the first domino to fall. Now Quinyon Mitchell. And I know by taking the center at 20, Miami needs a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have taken Quinyon Mitchell there. So I couldn't get Quinyon, which is what everybody was talking about last year with C.J. Stroud. You take Will Anderson at 2, Arizona's not trading 3 and giving you the opportunity to take C.J. Stroud for the price that they got for Will Anderson. So you have to take the player that has a higher value. Center is not a huge value right now for Miami, but corner is, because they had to let go of McKinney.
My brain is blank right now.
Who's number 25? Johnson something. Oh, man. It's going to bother me until I remember it. Number 25. Maybe you guys know it.
They're probably screaming at you, telling you what it is.
Probably so. Xavier Howard. There it is. Xavier Howard. They got rid of Xavier Howard. So you know that they're on the board and wanting a corner. The best corner on the board is Quinyon Mitchell. We take Jackson Powers Johnson. There's no way they trade with us at 20 or 21. Mm-hmm. But we also know at 22 who's desperate for a center. Because if the people that we think are in line to take the snaps at center are just not what the Eagles want, Zach Frazier and Jackson Powers Johnson would both be gone if we took a corner at number 20, because we wouldn't be able to trade up to 23, I don't think, with the Texans, with some of these defensive linemen that are available and falling. The Cowboys need a center. The Buccaneers need a center. The Packers have some pretty, you know, pressing needs with some of the tackles that are available. This seems to me to be the move. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is that defended enough in your mind, you think?
Yeah, I was just trying to understand where your brain was there.
And I don't do this much. So I don't want people to think it's like, oh, he just wants the Steelers to get better. Obviously, I do. But I could be like, and now at pick 22, the Eagles are going to trade their pick for the next year. I don't do that. So back to the draft. Philadelphia Eagles, pick number 22 overall. I'm going to do it. I'm going to give them Zach Frazier again. I don't know. Is it Cam Jurgens you keep talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly can tell you I don't know a whole lot about him. And I'm not quite sold, because I haven't read as much as you might have that would convince me that he's the heir apparent. And I think the center position with the Eagles and the tush push, if they don't get rid of it, or the brotherly shove, or whatever they're going to call it, cheating is what we really should call it. Whatever you're going to do with it, you got to have a center that can do that. And Zach Frazier has even been touted as being better than Jackson Powers Johnson in some people's blogs. So you don't get Jackson Powers Johnson. You don't get something to sniff at there. It's a pretty good prize.
And I do think that Zach Frazier fits well in Philadelphia, especially with that offensive strategy, whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah.
Because he was on the wrestling team in college, right? At least in high school, but I think in college too.
Yes. That brings us to pick number 23. And what better than to take Ladd McConkey, a guy that catches everything. And you've got Nico Collins, who's your clear number one. You've got your safety blanket and Dalton Schultz, who's your tight end. Add another wide receiver there. You could argue they could have added a defensive lineman and they could have done all of that, but C.J. Stroud needed weapons to beat Baltimore last year during the playoffs. He didn't have them. You're going to have to do that to make this work. And I think Ladd McConkey, when he did the juggernaut drill or the gauntlet, it was insane. The dude, I mean, it wasn't even like he was trying to catch anything.
That was super impressive.
So Ladd McConkey goes at 23. Now, here we go, Monica. I know what some people will be thinking. And I know what I sent you the other day. But I did some research after we did this. And I got to thinking about it, and I thought, okay, most people get enamored with a couple of things. They love the story of who has the most touchdowns and all of these kinds of things. Who is a what they would consider to be a star running back in the NFL. Monica, you can see this. The others can't. The overall grade of Jonathan Brooks over his three seasons in college football, 84.8 as a sophomore or a freshman, 74.9 as a sophomore, and 91.5 as a junior. But he only had 1 year where he was really the guy. Because Bijan was, of course, there.
I was like, because he had to deal with Bijan, yeah.
So, I could say that Jonathan Brooks has a lot of potential, and I think I'd be right in saying that. Jalen Wright's another individual that is a little intriguing to me because he had steady production every year that he played, and he got steadily better with his grade. But again, I don't really know that he fits the bill of what the Dallas Cowboys will be looking at running back. But there is a guy that I think is going to be a hot commodity, though I'm not sure he necessarily deserves to be. Mm-hmm. I think he will be. When you have 27 touchdowns in a season, just rushing the ball, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
And look at his grades in the playoffs, when the playoffs really start for them, which is the Ohio State game. 73.3, 61.6 against Iowa, but they didn't really play a whole lot of, you know, it was a rough game against Iowa. 69 against Alabama, a really good showing. And then 77.2 against Washington. And some people could even argue, he's not the best running back they had. I think number seven is a little bit better. He went back for another year at Michigan after originally declaring to come out, but Dallas has needed a running back that has a nose for the end zone since they let Zeke go. And so I'm going to give him Blake Corum.
I am going to disagree with you completely. And I would go with, if they were going to go running back here, I would go with somebody way off the reservation. Cody Schrader.
Cody Schrader. He's not in my top five. For what that's worth. Not that that means anything because I've missed on running backs before, but I feel that if this were to happen, that Blake Corum is a classic overdrafted running back.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think he's going to be a good running back in the NFL? Yeah, he is my number two ranked running back. Spoiler alert for those that are listening, but we'll see. As of right now, though, I'm putting him there because Dallas needs a running back really more than any other position. The centers are both gone now. You don't want to overreach for something. You could take a tackle here, but this is a pretty deep tackle class, and I think they could find a tackle later on in the draft too. The Green Bay Packers are here, and they need Amarius Mims. I mean, when you basically go from one shade of G to another shade of G, how can that really be so horrible for you? If you're a Georgia Bulldog, you go to Green Bay, it's literally the same font, just red and black instead of green, white, and yellow. It's the same font. Like, pretty much
exactly the same. Yeah.
Pretty much to a T. The only difference is Georgia has a slight point, it looks like, at the bottom of the base here.
Georgia has recent success. And yeah,
Georgia's a better team. Other than that, it's the exact same. Now, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's projected that Devin White is leaving in free agency. When I originally did this first mock draft, I gave them a quarterback because the quarterback market had not set in stone yet and they had not re-signed Baker Mayfield. They've since done that. They've re-signed him. They've got him. So I'm going to give Peyton Wilson to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I kind of figured you were going with Peyton Wilson or Jerzon Newton. That's kind of where I thought you were going, one of those two places.
You are not incorrect. I'm going with Jerzon Newton at 27.
Gotcha.
If you're the Arizona Cardinals and you walk out of this draft with Malik Nabers and Jerzon Newton, you have to be happy about that in prospect and on paper.
Oh, yeah.
You get two of the top three needs that you have. You're not reaching for a cornerback here yet. This is a deep corner class. Deep corner class. You're not reaching for that yet. You still have the ability to go back in the second round and draft some more of these positions again. You're doing a good job, I think, if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you're coming away with Jerzon Newton and Malik Nabers. So now we come to pick number 28. And if we ever had doubted that they needed a wide receiver, we have to realize now they need a wide receiver in Buffalo. And I'm going to give them the same guy I've been giving them, and that's Troy Franklin. I still think that that makes a ton of sense. I think Stephon Diggs is on his last year there, perhaps. Maybe they end up trading for T. Higgins. As soon as I say this, that will probably come through. And they'll have three wide receivers that are really, really good.
I kind of thought you were going to go with Leiatu Latu there.
I had thought about it. But I don't know. I think that... I think the Bills don't want to draft a linebacker when they've had Von Miller deal with his injuries and they've had other injuries that they've dealt with. I don't think they want to take Leiatu Latu there. But I will say this. What I had done for the Detroit Lions is no longer possible because they traded for Carlton Davis. I cannot give them another corner.
Mm-mm.
But I sit here and I think, if I am the Detroit Lions, what would make my team better? What would truly give me an edge over other teams that we don't currently have? And I'm going to give them Chop Robinson. You put Chop Robinson, again, injury concerns here with Leiatu Latu. I'm just not going to do that for that team because they're trying to win now, and I think they want guys that they know they can rely on, and they don't necessarily have a huge history of drafting guys that are absolutely injury-prone in their own right. Yeah, they took Hendon Hooker, who had torn his ACL, and I get that, but Hendon Hooker was not a known injured player every season.
Right.
Right? Like, so I'm going to give him Chop Robinson there and try to continue to bolster that defense. But there is a team that I do think would make perfect sense for Leiatu Latu, and we'll get to him at the end of this because I don't think he's going to make it into the top 32 in this particular mock draft. But here we go. At 29 and 30, I'm going back-to-back Bama corners. 30 and 31, excuse me. I'm going to go Terrion Arnold at 30. And I'm going to go at 31, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I would have switched that.
I know. Gone
personality fit, I think that Kool-Aid is better in Baltimore because he's more physical. And Terrion Arnold is better in San Francisco.
But see, this is what I think, though. San Francisco needs a physical corner. And I think Baltimore isn't winning with physical corners.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have Marlon Humphrey. They have Marcus Peters. They've had nothing to show for it. So I think they need more of a finesse and more of a player who can get in front of the ball and not beat you up. Because I think a good comp for Kool-Aid McKinstry is Pat Surtain. I don't know that it's a perfect comp, but I think it's a good one. That they both kind of play with a similar style of, I'm going to beat you up for 60 minutes, and if you beat me, you beat me, but it's not going to be easy to get by me. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Baltimore, if they're going to do an introspection of their of themselves, they got to change. And they got to change some things pretty drastically. So I also think that Terrion Arnold is going to be rated higher for people because for some reason he's a media darling right now. And Kool-Aid McKinstry is kind of rocket shipping down boards, not up.
That makes no sense.
I know. Crazy. That brings us to the Kansas City Chiefs, who I've been giving a tight end for multiple weeks. And I'm so tempted to do it again, but I'm not going to. I guess the thing that I'm struggling with Kansas City is outside of tight end, I don't know what their huge weakness would be. Because tight end, you can know it's a weakness because Travis Kelce can't play forever. But pretty much every other position that they have outside of wide receiver, they've kind of got some bona fide guys. However, they're more than likely losing L'Jarius Sneed.
I was about to say, but we're that's not taking into consideration who they're losing.
And I also look at it and think, you're losing a team player there that has been very much instrumental in everything that you do. And you look at Nate Wiggins, and yet again, he's gotten better. And I want to point this out. I don't necessarily love him completely, but I want to point this out. He played three less games, all right, in 2023 than he did in 2022. He allowed 18 receptions on 41 targets, 176 yards, one touchdown. He had two picks. The year before that, he played 13 games, had 61 targets, and gave up a pass 50% of the time. Basically, if you threw his way in 2022, it was a legit 50-50 shot.
Well, it's, I mean, honestly, 18 out of 41 is not that far off from 50-50.
Exactly.
Because 20 out of 41 would essentially be 50-50.
But I want to point something out in just a second. It's the yardage that's gone so down drastically that I think has got me more excited about his potential here. And I'm not sure if I'm going to take him just yet.
I don't think so because that is what 12 yards in 2022. Mm-hmm. And then that's 9.5 yards in 2023. So it's not that big of a difference.
I'm talking though, not just averaged out. I'm talking for the season on less receptions. If you take the logic of 41 targets, 21 catches, let's say. It's a perfect 50-50 both years. He still allowed less receptions. He was targeted less. I know he played three less games, but there's no way he would have been targeted 20 times over three games. It seems like people were shying away from him just a little bit more in 23. His coverage grade in 2023 did go to an 83.9. He allowed 43.9% completion percentage, 78.5 man coverage grade, 74 zone coverage grade, and he has 7 forced incompletions, 8 coverage stops, and 14.4 average depth of target. So I look at him and I think, well, let's see who he played that's of note. Florida State, back when they had Jordan Travis.
Was that the game that he went out?
No. This is week one going down. So when Jordan Travis was in the game playing the full season, because he didn't get hurt until the very end of the year, right, Jordan Travis?
Let me look.
Because I'm pretty sure this was back when everybody was talking about Florida State being a very big contender for the playoff and Travis being a Heisman contender. He had his best game of the season at that point. In week four, he had 76.9. Then he played better again against Miami, 76.5. Against North Carolina, he had an 84.1. And he ended the year at a 64. So, I mean, he's hit or miss in some of these, but he had 6 games of 69 or better. And he played 10. So, I look at him and think, because he has so many things going for him, because he's the type of player that everybody's high on, he's the perfect player to sneak in to the end of the first round.
I was iffy on him, and then I look at those stats, and my opinion of him just went way down. So, and I know stats don't tell the whole story, but he didn't make that big of an improvement.
Well, let's point it out this way, though, because Mike Sandstrill is somebody everybody's singing praises of, right?
Mm-hmm.
His numbers got worse less receptions, pretty much the same yards. And he saw less targets, too. And I can't really sit here and look at him and go, yeah, he's my guy. He had 6 interceptions. Sure. Great. Totally awesome. But most of what he did that was well, in the playoffs, when it mattered most, he didn't play very well. Mm-mm. They won despite that, but he didn't play incredibly well to where I could sit here and go, well, Mike Sandstrom should go up. I could look at TJ Tampa, because I was looking at this earlier. He pretty much stayed the same.
And almost what about Rakestraw from Missouri? So
Rakestraw was one that I was looking at too. His are not incredibly far off either.
Mm-mm.
He's 10 off, but his yards are kind of the same. But his passer rating, 96.9, 94.8,
really
and 108.
Passer rating against him.
Yeah, and his man coverage is terrible. His zone coverage is bad. You got to have a man coverage player when you're with the Chiefs. So I could go down to Kamari Lassiter, and I could kind of say the same thing. 15 out of 39, 32 out of 55 is not incredibly far off. It's about 24 pretty much both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
His yards went way down, and his passer rating went way down. His man coverage is 81.5, and his zone coverage is 73.8. But nobody is talking about him right now. And the dude was in the green pretty much from week 4 or 3 all the way down to week number, 14. I don't know that I would be wise in taking him, though, if that makes sense. So I look at the corners the way that we've got them, and Nate Wiggins is the best one available. So if I'm going to look at strengths versus weaknesses, I have to make the decision, am I going to go after wide receiver or am I going to go after corner? Because this is a deep corner class and because the Chiefs are more than likely going to get another pick if they do end up trading Legarius Sneed, which I think they're going to have to, I'm not going to take a corner now. But I wanted to kind of have that exercise and talk about why I would pick Nate Wiggins if I were going to, because I do think that his coverage got better in this last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, though, that it would be enough for them to be like, yeah, let's do this, because Legarius Sneed was an out-of-nowhere pick for the Chiefs.
Right, yeah.
And he played very, very well. And I wish I could take this and go back to years past and be like, hey, show me what Legarius Sneed's rankings were in all these. And I just don't have the ability on Pro Football Focus, I don't think, to go back that far. So we shift to wide receivers. And I have to start looking around. And you have to start asking some of the obvious questions. Who's going to be the player that's going to go up? Well, we have to talk about one key stat and one key stat only. Drops. I think no one cares in Kansas City about anything else right now than how many drops does a player have.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you go through and you look at everything, 23 for Xavier Worthy was pretty good. 86 targets, 55 receptions, 845 yards, 11 touchdowns, 1 drop. His contested catch rate was 36.4. His drop rate was a 1.8%. Adonai Mitchell, pretty good. Roman Wilson, looking at his drop rate, 2%. Not bad. 1 drop. 789 yards this past year. Didn't really do a whole lot like you would think, but they didn't really throw the ball a whole lot in Michigan either. Ricky Purcell, a 3% drop rate, had 2 drops this past season in 12 games played, 963 yards. I'm not really sure that he would be the guy in the fit. Jermaine Burton, 0.0% drop rate. Dude has no drops at all. Now, his
contesting. But he also, he doesn't have drops, but he has a very Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh, that's true. But here's the funny thing. So did Tyreek Hill. Now, I know they're not the same player speed-wise or anything like that, but I think what the Chiefs are going to be looking for if they're taking a wide receiver is they're going to be looking for a guy that is good at catching the ball contested. Jermaine Burton would fit that bill if we wanted to draft him. A 56.3% rate of his catches were contested. He had 11 deep catches, which was tied 33rd, and he's not necessarily a slot guy either, which is what they don't really need right this moment. But I'm not going to take Burton because I don't think he fits what they're looking for. But there is a player that I think could be an interesting player. And I think it's going to be one of those where you're going to have to overlook the very thing that I've been saying. And I've been setting it up because there's one thing that I think is going to be incredible. And that is, let's see here. I'm trying to pull this up because you sent me something I want to look at too. Here we go. Yeah, let's talk about this real quick. I can't find the grades. It's not showing me.
The grades and when I sent you?
Yeah.
All the way. It was all the way down at the bottom.
Okay. Won't show me. You're going to have to probably talk about it.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I have, just have to sign in. Hold on.
Gotcha.
Or not.
So what I sent Michael was the Legarius Sneed college stats, and his let's see, it's for his grades. It's not going to be as detailed as the game by game that Michael had, but I can pull up the game by game for his last season here, and his coverage grades are not great. They have him graded out at a 74.3 overall in coverage. That's not very good. Let's look at a couple other stats here. Let's see. He had, over his college career, he had 148 tackles. And I am trying to find out. Let's see. And he had 994 yards against. So not super. He was not exactly the most stellar corner coming out. And he went to Louisiana Tech. Interestingly, though, he did have 14 pass breakups and 8 picks. And he only allowed 6 touchdowns. That's over his career. So that is quite interesting.
So I'm going to go off the reservation here. I'm going to give them Luke McCaffrey.
I actually don't hate that at all.
They saw up front what Christian McCaffrey did to them. And as they look at everything the way that it went, the Kansas City Chiefs, they need speed. McCaffrey was faster than his brother Christian, Luke was. And I think if you're going to give them a wide receiver, I still would probably lean Nate Wiggins in that regard. Probably, only because I think that they're going to argue, well, he'll be better in this second level. But if you're going to give them a wide receiver, out of Adonai Mitchell, which is a possibility, I don't know that Adonai Mitchell covers what they need. So I think that Luke McCaffrey covers that. That's who I want to give them. And that concludes my third mock draft. So Monica, you've got it here on the screen that you can see. Let me try to pull down here. What are some things that stood out to you going down from 1 to 7 and then 17 to 23, and we'll work our way that way? Anything in particular that you liked or disliked about this one?
I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. going after Malik Nabers, if that really does happen, there's going to be a lot of public screaming, I think. A lot of public screaming. I am not as bought into the J.C. Latham hype yet. So that one, I feel like that might be a little bit of a reach. So I'm unsure about that one, but I think the Bengals getting a tackle is a good pick. I publicly do not like JJ McCarthy, so, but I've talked about that lots of times. We've already kind of discussed the Steeler stuff, Zach Frazier. Ladd McConkey was interesting because I kind of thought you might go defensive line there.
Yeah, so that was a possibility. And then here's 8 through 14 as well as 24 through 30. For those of you that are wondering, the reason that this is the way that it is, it's because we've got two rows here that Monica's looking at, so I've got to separate them that way.
So, it's been a minute since we talked about it. Can you go back to why you put Penix Jr. over, why you went with Michael Penix Jr. over J.J. McCarthy to Minnesota?
Because I think the flashier player who has accomplished more statistically is what they're going to be looking for. J.J. McCarthy won't strike fear into the NFC North's eyes as they will think that Michael Penix will, who has the dual threat.
Gotcha. So you don't think that his injury concerns will make a difference?
I'm sure that they might, but I also know that too many teams don't care about the injury concerns and they'll draft somebody anyway because, you know, it's just their job. So
yeah,
I think that he's going to get drafted, but I don't know. I don't know. I just kind of feel like Michael Penix Jr. is going to be one of those that is probably overdrafted.
And I've been reading a lot lately that Bo Nix is a Sean Payton archetype. So I did think it was very interesting that you put Bo Nix to Denver. I feel very, very torn about Bo Nix because I think there's a massive difference in looking at his numbers and what you see on the field. And what you see on the field concerns me. But his statistics look amazing. And so I cannot justify those in my head. And so I can't figure out how I feel about Bo Nix. So, yeah, I'm kind of torn there. Blake Corum. I just don't know. I don't know about the Cowboys. I kind of feel like the NFC East is wide open, so I think that Dallas needs to be in attack mode. And I don't know if Blake Corum is that guy.
Well, what was the reason they were winning so much before Tony Pollard was the guy?
It was their offensive line.
It was, but it also had something to do with the fact that they took a running back fourth overall that many people were thinking had no business going that high. And they invested in that because they thought, hey, this guy's got a nose for the end zone. He basically decimated Bama, decimated Oregon, decimated Wisconsin. And that's the kind of path that Blake Corum ended up having to a degree with the touchdown production. Do I think Blake Corum deserves to be the number one running back taken? No, I'm saving that for later, who I think it should be. That's my Daniel Jeremiah thing that I'm going to hold on till the very last minute with this one or two players that I think could end up being the number one guys. But Blake Corum, to me, screams Jerry Jones overdrafting. And if I'm doing that, Jerry Jones has proven over the last couple of years, he'll take the flashy player when he has other needs. CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons. There were other needs at the time that that team specifically needed to be thinking about because they had Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup when they took CeeDee Lamb. Mm-hmm. They still had the defensive line the way that they had them, and they took this flashy kid from Penn State and Micah Parsons because he was the best player on the board to them, and they knew they could do something with him. That's where I think Blake Corum makes sense. Anything else from these lists of players?
Going back to the other side, I think whenever you describe Spencer Rattler as wish Patrick Mahomes was the perfect description.
I know it's not going to happen, but I want it to. And watch it happen in the second or third round. But I would love it because the memes would be spectacular.
That'd be so great. That'd be so great. So for these others, if Denver got Jared Verse, I would be ecstatic. And I know after the combine, there was a lot of conversation about Braden Fisk, but did you watch game tape? Jared Verse, I have been high on him since before the season. Love him. The Chiefs pick is ridiculously hard. What do you think the odds are that they will trade out?
I wouldn't be surprised if they used this pick and Snead to trade up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm the Chiefs and I see, let's go with down here around pick number 16.
Mm-hmm.
I would like Jared Verse on the team more than I would like Luke McCaffrey.
Absolutely.
I would like Chop Robinson on the team more than I would like Luke. I would like Jerzon Newton on the team more. Peyton Wilson, even, you could argue, could be a good pick. But they've got Drew Tranquil, so they probably aren't going that route. Any of these wide receivers I would rather have than Luke McCaffrey up front. But if you're going to stay put, then do this. Would it be possible to contact a team like Arizona and say, Legarius Sneed and pick 32 for number 4, straight up?
So, I am just looking, when I was looking up Legarius Sneed's stats, I saw that they supposedly want a second round pick for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Lions are supposedly really, really wanting him. So where are the Lions picking in this?
29. They're the ones that ended up with Chop Robinson.
That would be too much to give up to move up 3 spots. But it would make a massive difference because you could get a Terrion Arnold or Kool-Aid McKinstry right there before 2 teams that need corners.
Right. Well, and I would even think, like, for example, if Pittsburgh gets their cap situation taken care of, I would trade down from 20 to 32.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we got Legarius Sneed and 32 out of it, deal.
Mm-hmm.
You can take 20. We don't care. I'll give a second-round pick next year to do that. Fine. And then you can take whatever the best player down here would be. But at the same time, it's going to be tough to do. I still think if the Chiefs are going to stay put, wide receivers probably the move, because you get a guy like a wide receiver for 5 years, they play longer typically in the NFL.
Right.
That's why I think you see the offensive lineman and defensive lineman usually up there higher, because they have longer shelf lives usually in the NFL. And it's one of the biggest reasons why you see, and you notice I'm starting to do this, edge, defensive lineman, offensive lineman, wide receiver. Those are the positions that usually make the most noise in the NFL draft. Overall grade for this as we close out at 54 minutes?
I don't know. I might give this one, I don't know. I'm somewhere around a B minus maybe.
Better or worse than the first two?
I feel like that's comparing apples and oranges.
Possibly, but answer the question.
I don't know. I can't commit to an answer.
You're going to have to. We need to know.
We need to know. Ugh. I don't know. I think I liked your second one the most.
Okay. I'll have to do better next time we do this.
You got another week to work on it.
That's true. Well, Monica, it's been another fun week. What has changed between Thursday and Friday is what has changed between Monday and Friday. because we recorded all of these Monday night. If ever anything breaks and there's news that we need to do, we'll obviously hop on the podcast and do it. But we're glad that you're here with us for the Goat Network ride. Tell your friends, we're doing the best we can, but it would be a lot easier if we could get some more listeners to be able to try to put more time and effort into this, because we know what we're doing is making a difference. So you can email us at goatversusgoat@gmail.com. And even if you're one of the five people that subscribe to us, please let us know that it helps brighten your day. If you listen this long, find out how to spell the word falafel, and we'll see you Monday.